She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and we are guaranteeing that you are going to have a lot of fun, exciting, and healthy things to think about today. This show is sponsored by Chapman Tucson, and we sincerely appreciate their ongoing support of my mission and vision. We have an amazing show planned for today, and I don't want to rush through it. We have an important person making a difference for our planet. Please join me in welcoming Myra Goodman, who with her husband Drew co-founded Earthbound Farm, which, among other things, became the first company to successfully launch pre-washed packaged salad for retail sale. And think about that, everybody. The first company to put what I call salad in a bag and made it easy. So we're going to hear about that backstory. And that was about 29 years ago. So Myra, welcome to Mrs. Green's World.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. And I know it's going to be fun. And I want to do an announcement about one of our wonderful sponsors, Ecobella. Ecobella was another first. They were one of the first companies to lead the way in providing cruelty-free organic cosmetics and natural skincare products, which is part of what started me on my journey. It's still hard to find easy beauty products that are good for you and good for the planet, and I encourage you to check them out to see why they are the real deal. You can trust me on this one. Ecobella's products are good for people, animals, and the planet. Trust me. Cruelty-free is one of their big mantras. Check them out at ecobella2c's.com, because by doing it, you're taking action that's good for your health and the health of the planet. And remember, ecobella.com, and you can tell them Mrs. Green sent you. So Myra, on with the show, and thank you again for being here and taking your time with all you have going on in your universe to share with us the story of Earthbound Farm.
Well, thank you, Gina. There's no place I would rather be right now, so thank you so much.
Well, that makes my day.
I love your show and all you're doing.
Well, I will tell people a little backstory that I am so tenacious. This year, earlier in May, I was so blessed to go to Sustainable Foods Institute. I was invited by Jen from the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch, went out there and lived in about 5 days of heaven, all about healthy eating. And I got to meet Myra and visit the farm. And she was a person that you don't ever forget. She is a person. I'm talking about you like you're not here. But it was, I took bunches of pictures. I ate fresh, delicious, organic, healthy food. So let's make it all about you from now on. You came from Manhattan, and now you're one of the most successful organic farmers in the country. Give us the Reader's Digest version. Like, can you tell us 30 years in a couple of minutes?
Right. Well, so my husband and I are both from New York. I was born in Brooklyn and went to high school in Manhattan. And I ended up going to college at UC Berkeley in California. I was going to go to graduate school in international relations. And so I had no farming experience either. Either did my boyfriend then, now my husband Drew. But we had this opportunity to live on this little farm in Carmel Valley and do improvements in exchange for rent. And I thought that would be a great place to study for my GREs and look around for graduate schools. So it was really just going to be a stopover until I figured out what my real career would be. But I have to say, I was this New York City girl suddenly on this beautiful little farm in Carmel Valley. There were the most delicious heirloom raspberries you could imagine, and hundreds of trees, walnuts and almonds and apricots and plums. And I fell absolutely in love with living on the land, living off the land, and just just kept putting graduate school off one year at a time. And fast forward now 29 years, Earth Mound Farm is the largest grower of organic produce in North America. A very unexpected career, I have to say.
And it makes you think about if you're deciding things or if you're always being guided. That's like me, to me, the story of Mrs. Green's World. If you had told me 10 years ago that I'd be hosting a national radio show, I would have looked at you just a little bit wonky. Now, you went from raspberries and starting that, but the game changer for you was mixed greens. Why mixed greens? What happened to say for you to say, okay, we're going to do mixed greens? Was it a big organic aha moment or a big this is what people want moment?
Well, what it was we had this teeny little farm. So the farm was 2.5 acres, which included our home and some land that wasn't even farmable. So it was a very small amount of land, and the raspberries grossed us. They were about an acre of raspberries. We grossed about $10,000 a year on our raspberry sales, did not make enough money to support ourselves. And it was the early 80s, right when Alice Waters was starting to introduce baby vegetables up
right.
in Berkeley, baby lettuces, little baby carrots, little baby turnips. And I was actually babysitting for a little boy whose parents owned a restaurant in Carmel just to help us make enough money to support ourselves. And the mom who was the chef said, you know, I bet you could grow some of those little baby lettuces here and some of the restaurants in Carmel would buy them. And so for us, it was really because we had such this little farm that the thought that we could harvest lettuces when they were just a few inches tall and didn't take up that much room and sell them for the same price as full-size lettuces just seemed like a perfect fit for our little farm. We could actually produce a lot of them in a small area. So we started with just selling these little baby heads of lettuces, 24 to a case, to a few local restaurants.
And it took off, I'm sure.
Putting them in the bags is a whole other thing. So at that point, okay, so we started growing the lettuces. I would say we moved on the farm in 84, started growing lettuces in 85. And at that point in the supermarket, all you really saw were heads of iceberg lettuce. You'd see a little bit of romaine, a little bit of red leaf and green leaf. There were no pre-washed salads, no baby greens. They were really just a few of the really high-end restaurants were selling those gourmet greens. And so what Drew and I found is that we were working on the farm from sunrise to sunset. We would stop working when it was dark. And we were eating really unhealthy food. We would have, you know, get pizza to go or have, you know, something, you know, some frozen meal that we would heat because we were just too tired
right,
to cook.
Quick and
we
easy.
Were never eating our salad, even though we were literally growing it right outside our kitchen window. So what we started doing was we started this routine of cutting a whole bunch of salad on Sunday afternoons, because Sunday afternoons we tried to take off, and washing them and drying them and putting a Ziploc bag full in the fridge for every day of the week. So we'd have 7 Ziploc bags. And we found that when we had salad that was washed and ready to eat, we would eat it every single night. And so that was the big lipo, the big aha was, oh my goodness, if when we lived in New York, we could open a bag of these beautiful, healthy greens, toss them with dressing, and eat a salad. Wouldn't we eat salad all the time? And so that's how we came up with the idea.
And it's unbelievable to me because it's still the same thing. I want to eat healthy, but please make it quick and easy for me. So that is, I mean, it's the same formula for everybody that has these busy, busy lives. But why did you decide to go organic, which is a huge step? It's a lot of work. It costs a lot of money. At what point did you and your husband look at each other and say, well, if we're going to do this, it's going to be organic? Or did you always know that if you were going to do it, it's going to be healthy?
Okay, so you have to realize that Drew and I really didn't know much about farming. You know, when you grew up in New York and you bought your produce, and I didn't eat very much fresh produce growing up, you don't see those chemicals, you don't taste them, you don't smell them, you really don't know that they're there. And back 30 years ago, there just wasn't much information in the press, there wasn't much interest about how food was produced. And so for us, we landed on this little farm, and it was farmed conventionally. And the farmer that was there really nice nice guy. He's in his 80s now. We're still friendly with him. He gave us two city kids the crash course in farming. And so it was just a prescribed routine. At this time of year, you need to spray this pesticide so that this doesn't you don't get this infestation. You need to spray this fungicide because this can be an issue in this time of year. This is when you fertilize the berries. Here's the chemical that you mix this way and put it in the drip line. So we just nodded and took notes and didn't even really think about it. And then a few days later, so we're still probably less than a week of being farmers, it's time to follow the directions. And my husband opened the door to the shed and just hated the smell and was afraid to use them. And I just remember the moment just kind of standing in between these rows of raspberries looking at this, you know, beautiful farm around me and just feeling just how magnificent and miraculous nature was. And it was just this feeling of, why do I want to poison her? Why would I put these poisons on this food that I'm growing in my backyard that I'm going to eat, that I'm going to sell to my neighbors? And so we didn't know what we were getting into. It was just this really clear, heartfelt intuition that there had to be a better way, and we were going to figure it out. And we closed the door to that shed, and we never applied a chemical in our whole lives.
Well, it blows me away because I was still not living consciously back then. I can tell you that right now. I have said it on the air numerous times because it's good to face these things and move on. But I fed my kids Lunchables, and they survived. I have kids that are healthy, healthy eaters, and so it's all good. But
yeah, well, I was raised on TV dinners. My mom is from Hungary, you know, and she really believed, she moved to America, didn't speak any English. She moved to America she was less than a year before my sister was born, and then I was born a year after that. And she believed the commercials, that TV dinners were a perfect, well-balanced meal that she could be proud to serve her family. And I ate TV dinners probably five nights a week growing up.
And I want to say, this is so cliche, but baby, look at you now. So talk about what
it's just really funny. And so I always say, hey, if you know, I didn't grow up cooking. I didn't know anything about preparing foods. Everything was, you know, out of an aluminum foil tray, you know, and now I've authored three cookbooks. So it's really, I'm a great example. Like, you're a great example that anytime you can invent your life any way you want to and learn anything that you want to.
Yes. We are the masters of our fate, and that's, boy, am I a living proof to that, and so are you. But, I mean, I just want to laugh with delight when I hear this New York City girl goes to the farm. I mean, I think that might be one of your books that's in the making. Okay, so what goes into making a farm organic? Can you just go a little bit into details about that? Because I don't think everybody knows that. Is it just the chemicals that you use in treating the
It's really not. What for you to have a successful organic farm, you really have to have a healthy ecosystem. It's very analogous to kind of the holistic personal care versus just using medications that the doctor describes.
Yes.
Like, if you don't want to have cholesterol medication or diabetes medication or high blood pressure medication, you need to be healthy. So that includes exercise and eating well. And I'm not saying that everybody can avoid those drugs, but a lot of people can avoid those drugs.
Yes, by diet. Right.
By diet and exercise and lifestyle. So it's a similar thing with an organic farm. You have to have a really healthy ecosystem that is able to, combat natural diseases that will spring up in the soil. And so on an organic farm, healthy soil is key. So you need to be adding organic matter to the soil. So one thing that we do in organic farms, which is actually really important, is we grow cover crops. So what that is a crop that is planted not to be harvested and sold, but it is planted just with the intention of enriching the soil, and then you till it in. And so what that cover crop does is it makes your soil healthier, and it also gives the soil a break from producing a crop. Another thing that we do, since we have some natural insecticides, but they are not as powerful and they don't work as well as those really strong chemical insecticides.
Right.
So one of our most important techniques is what we try and do is develop a very strong population of what we call beneficial insects. So these are insects that actually live by eating the pests that would destroy our crop. So one of the things that we do, and one thing I do want to point out is that a lot of these techniques that I'm explaining also help explain why organic farming is more expensive and why organic food does actually need to cost a little bit more.
Right.
Because these techniques actually cost money that the farmer is paying for versus chemicals that are getting into our environment and polluting our environment that aren't directly accounted for in the cost of the food you're eating. So that's a little tangent, but I just want you to keep that in mind as I'm explaining it, because one of the things that I was talking about is we have beneficial habitats planted throughout our farm. So we take some of the land that we pay usually pretty high rents for, and we grow a crop that's specifically grown to handle our insects, and it serves two functions. One is it's a habitat for the beneficial insects to live there. So say we planted a crop of romaine lettuce that would tend to get infested by aphids. We would, and we have these beneficial insects living there, and they help, and they eat the aphids, and they keep the crop clean. Once that romaine is tilled, there would be no place for those good beneficial insects to live. They would fly away. But because we have this beneficial habitat, there's a place for them to live. So the next time we put lettuce in the ground or another crop, those beneficial insects are there to do their job for us. And last thing I'm going to say about a beneficial habitat is it also serves as a distraction crop for the pests. So we also try and plant things that the pests like to eat so that maybe they'll eat that instead of our crop. So there's a lot of integrative techniques like that that organic farmers have to use in addition to just putting in organic inputs.
That are invisible to the consumer. And I have to, I think it's not a tangent when you talk about why organic does cost more, because to me, it does, but it really doesn't. Because if more people ate organic, ate healthy, our healthcare costs would go down, our attendance for kids in school would go up. I mean, it's that integrated approach.
The environment, well, it's very interesting.
Totally.
There was a very interesting study that came out, and a University of California Berkeley professor was part of it. I just read it in the newspaper. I don't know if you read it, but it was talking about how fast food workers, you know, that they're low-paid workers, but the cost of, you know, they're the ones that are on Medicare and on food stamps, and so that it's actually the public that's paying the cost of making, of having them live off wages that are below a living wage. And I think that's very analogous to conventional food that's produced. The conventional farmer isn't paying for these issues when wells are contaminated or there's dead zones in our ocean because of too much nitrogen fertilizer. They're not paying for the health issues of people that are exposed to pesticides. So it's just, we don't see that as consumers. It's most conventional and processed foods are artificially cheap, whereas organic food, you're pretty much paying the cost of producing it when you buy it, and it seems more expensive. And some people say, well, maybe it's not worth it. And so it's very important to have people understand that even though it costs more, it truly is a better value in
the
long
run. To your life, I mean, for the health, your health, the health of the family, the health of the community. What's your view on, with organic, to me, a really positive thing that you can count on, is there is a USDA standard that you have to meet in order to be able to call your food organic, that the produce that you sell to us. What's your view on the USDA and the standards?
Yes. So since 2002, the USDA has been regulating organic, and that has been really great for the industry because it means that there's uniform standards and there is a USDA organic seal. So whenever you see a product with that seal, you are reassured as a consumer that that product was not only grown organically, but it also, what's really great about certified organic food is that a lot of the ingredients that you want to make sure you're not eating are prohibited in organic foods. Like hydrogenated oils are not allowed in organic foods. Synthetic artificial flavors, colors, preservatives, all those dyes that are getting more linked to behavioral problems with kids, all of those preservatives that are getting more linked to different cancers, all of those are prohibited. And then when you get certified organic dairy products, you know that those animals were never fed antibiotics, never fed growth hormones, And also, the organic standards actually have standards that really ensure that the animals are treated more humanely, which is so important to me. So, you know, one of my big personal commitments is never to eat factory farmed animal products and to really just look for products that I know were raised humanely and were raised in a way that's better for the environment.
And in terms of an integrated approach, I'd like to come back to that when we take a short break. Everybody stay here with me. Time is flying because we are having fun. My guest is Myra Goodman. She's the co-founder of Earthbound Farm. More about her amazing journey and her trip to becoming an author and a restaurant owner. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. Fuel efficiency is picking up speed thanks to the new 48 turbocharged miles per gallon Volkswagen Jetta Hybrid. When you hear numbers like 48 highway miles per gallon and 42 city miles per gallon, you might think the Jetta Hybrid is more about fuel efficiency than fun. But for all its good looks and eco-responsibility, this Jetta gets its power from a turbocharged engine capable of 170 horsepower. And when you experience its ultra-fast 7-speed DSG automatic transmission, you'll realize that the Jetta has a lot more going on under the hood than your average hybrid. Yes, this new Jetta is quick and fun to drive, but it's still got the incredible efficiency you'd expect from a hybrid. How fuel efficient is it? Well, all you need to do is look, because each VW hybrid shows your energy usage and driving range on its touchscreen display. When you see how much fuel you're saving, you'll be pleasantly surprised by how economical this little speed demon can be. Please visit Chapman Volkswagen at 4500 East 22nd Street in Tucson or ChapmanTucson.com to find out more.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. A while back, I lost my job and I couldn't even support my family. A lot of people don't know Goodwill can help you find a job, but that's what they did for me. I've had this job for 7 years, and I love going to work. You know how they say Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill needs your donations now more than ever. Please donate today.
Bookman Sports Exchange is now open at 3330 East Speedway. We're taking our passion and experience of buying, selling, and trading books and music and applying it to the world of sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear. We are giving you another way to save money on the things that you love, Bookman style. Remember, Bookman Sports Exchange, sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear, now open daily from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Speedway east of Country Club. Check out bookmans.com for more info.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to, and what great things we are having the opportunity to think about today. Please join me in welcoming Myra Goodman, who with her husband, Drew, co-founded Earthbound Farm, the largest supplier of organic produce in the country. She's an author, a passionate champion for the environment, and helping to make organic produce an available choice, a healthy choice for all of us. Myra, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. I'm having a great time chatting with you today.
I'm having a great time, too. So we were talking about the USDA and having the confidence as a consumer to know when you see certified organic, it's something you can trust. And then segueing a little bit to, it's a combination of your integrated journey about, it's the same for me, only it happened later. Once you start eating healthy food, I call it kind of like the gateway to a more sustainable life. And you talked about cruelty-free with animals. I mean, that's another thing that happened for me on this journey. And I'm like, what are you doing? What are you eating? Look what they did to these poor animals. So can you talk a little bit about some of the steps in your growth, in your experience for you and Drew, in terms of running and expanding Earthbound Farm? That's a long question, but there are other pieces to it that you started to change in your life and at the farm.
So, do you want me to talk about more my personal journey with, because you were talking about the meat, or more about different ways that Earthbound has evolved to beyond organic farming, ways that we have made some ecological changes?
I guess I just wanted to make a plug for the whole cruelty-free thing, because I think that's really important and very much in sync with your message of eating healthy. But the bigger story and the impact you're having globally because of that personal journey is what you've done with Earthbound Farm as a leader in sustainability.
Yeah, but you know, I would love to circle back with you at some point, because my newest cookbook, which is officially for sale March 1st, is a vegan cookbook. And it's a vegan cookbook for everyone. And so my journey of writing that and eating more plant-based foods made me much more aware of a lot of the issues around factory farming. And I have to say that I've spent the first kind of, you know, like 3 decades with Earthbound promoting organic, and now I'm really adding to that for my personal passion, the plant-based eating as much as possible. You know, I'm not trying to turn people vegan, but really trying to get people aware of the factory farming situation and trying to get away from eating animals that have been treated in such an awful way. So you and I really, really are both in line in that. And at some point, if not today, maybe another day, we can really dive into that more deeply.
Well, I'm going to make you promise on the air that you'll come back after the cookbook is out, because I think this is the first. We're hearing it first on Mrs. Green's World. And the name of your new book is Straight from the Earth. And it is part of my personal journey. So I will talk with Kelly, and we would love to have you back to talk about that, just straight from the earth.
Okay, well, I would love to do that. But getting back to Earthbound, one of the things that I think we've been really striving to do is to get green in as many aspects of our business as possible. So while I'm so proud that Earthbound Farm grows all this organic produce and that we are getting organic, convenient, healthy salads to people around the country, I always felt really bad about our packaging. And there's absolutely no way to ship these pre-washed greens not in package, either a plastic bag originally and now more in those plastic tubs. And so we did a lot of research on the most ecological choice. And at the point that we were doing it, there was a big push into those corn plastics,
right,
which are theoretically biodegradable, but really only in industrial composting facilities. But we realized that corn is mostly genetically modified, and it's grown with a huge amount of chemicals, and it uses a lot of energy to convert corn into plastic. And what we realized was the very, very best environmental choice was post-consumer recycled plastic. So you're creating a demand for all the plastic bottles and the plastic that people are using, and then it takes a lot less energy and a lot less water to reuse that plastic than make it out of petroleum. And so what we've actually done, because we couldn't find enough 100% recycled plastic, is we were the first company to package our salads in 100% post-consumer recycled plastic, but we've actually started a sustainable packaging company where we make our own plastic and we make our own plastic tubs to pack our salad. And so that has been really a huge impact. And by doing that, Earthbound Farm just every year keeps over 2 million pounds of solid waste out of the landfills.
And especially as close you are as to the ocean, you're keeping them out of the ocean, which is another passion of mine.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other issue. So we try and do that. We try and look for ways that we can reduce our impact. You know, there's no way to eliminate it, but we try and reduce it. And I think, you know, it's very interesting, because I think there's so many these same little decisions that we all make in our households when we get post-consumer recycled paper towels instead of using virgin paper towels or toilet paper, or we buy products that are made out of recycled materials, or we're careful to recycle everything that we use. You know, we're making that impact every single day in our own homes as well.
And it makes a huge difference. And that's what I talk about on the show all the time. It's what I write about. Don't think you can't make a difference. Just take one step and we're all moving forward. And I think it's, but I have to say this, Myra, I don't think everybody who operates organic farms goes out and builds their own manufacturing of their packaging through post-consumer plastic. And I'm saying that with the absolute greatest feeling of respect for all that you're doing. And I just have to be Mrs. Green and say that my passion is overcoming me right now for what you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you. That's a whole other interview. And that's just very interesting because most of the only 30% of the plastic bottles in this country are actually recycled. And most of them are shipped to China on the empty ships going back. And so we really didn't even have a supply here. So it was very interesting starting as an organic farm and then learning all about what happens with plastic and plastic recycling. And it's amazing now that we have this plant, we built it adjacent to our salad processing facility. So instead of shipping plastic cartons made somewhere else on trucks in boxes that then get thrown away, the buildings are attached. And so on a conveyor belt, the plastic clamshells, as they're made, are sent over and the salad's packed right into it. So when you add all of the other resources that are saved because of how we're doing this now, it's really tremendous. And it's very exciting to see something like that make such a big impact.
And I just have to ask, is that what you were on Oprah for? You knew I was going to fit that in.
Oprah was a while ago. Oprah was really fun. And the funniest thing about Oprah is, okay, so, I started this business when I was 20. I'm turning 50 this year, and I had my kids pretty early. So I never in my whole life ever had time to watch daytime TV. I mean, if I was homesick, I was so sick that I couldn't even keep my eyes open. So I had no idea how big a deal Oprah was until I was on that set. And then I was like, oh my.
It's Oprah.
But the episode was called Ordinary People, Extraordinary Ideas. So we were two ordinary people, and our extraordinary idea was salad in a bag.
Okay,
and they did, Oprah makes the little movie, and the movie did definitely talked about organic, and it showed our organic farms, but we were on as the people that invented salad in a bag.
There you go. I mean, it's like I'm just putting it out there, and I hope someday someone says, oh, Oprah, you should listen to this, because Mrs. Green wants to be on your show, too. Who doesn't want to be on Oprah? Okay, let's get off Oprah and talk about Earthbound Farm and your commitment to, let's talk about the industry. Whereas in 1986, I think that when we had our conversation, you said something about people really weren't so excited that it was organic and healthy. They were excited that there was salad in a bag. And fast forward to how that's changed now. Are other companies really trying to get on board? What does the competition look like? What are you having to do to stay on top of the world?
Yeah, no, it's very, very different. When we started, so we put our first salad in a bag in 1986. So it was the specialty salads. And so what people were really buying at that point were convenience and this gourmet product. And even though it was organic, most people didn't know what that was or didn't really care. And what's interesting is that, so 3 years after us was when Fresh Express figured out the technology to put the iceberg lettuce in a bag, which was much more, the baby lettuces are cut at the bottom, and you don't need to what we call in the industry a modified atmosphere. You pretty much just put them in a bag and seal the bag, and they will stay fresh for a long time. Whereas chopped iceberg, you need to pull out the oxygen and put in nitrogen to have it look good, So anyway, so the salad category got really big with these iceberg salads because that was popular back then. But then what started happening was our salads, our specialty greens, because they're prettier, they're tastier, they're healthier, started really growing in popularity. And then all of these manufacturers of the iceberg salad started competing with us, with the baby greens. But at that point, consumers really started caring about organic. So we had, you know, this wonderful competitive advantage of having organic specialty salads, even when there was competition in conventional salads. And so now the good news is that the growth of organic specialty salads has gotten so big and has been so healthy that a lot of conventional growers have started growing this product. And so a lot of land has been transitioned, which is wonderful for the environment. In terms of our business climate, it's much more difficult because we have a lot more competition. And at the same time, there has been a lot of consolidation in the supermarket business so that these contracts are really big and they pit all of us against each other. So the profit margins have shrunk. So it's a very different climate than when we were trying to convince people to carry these funny little lettuces in a bag that they'd never seen or heard of.
Right. And now you just go and you go there. And I mean, it is so easy and convenient. And if you're entertaining, you just open the bags and throw them in a bunch of big salad bowls. But this is, I think, a good time to segue. In the years that I've been doing this, which is almost 6 years, sometimes I think people like to take a very easy black and white shot at the big dogs. And I don't. And I, by that, I mean the big purchasers like Costco. Will you talk about your relationship with Costco? What we're finding as a couple is Costco is carrying more and more certified organic produce. I don't think 5 years ago they had an organic section. And now there's a lot being held, you know, on the shelves by Costco, offered, I mean. So what about Costco? Were they a game changer for you?
Well, our story, the story of Earthbound Farm, really revolved around Costco because Costco was our first really big customer in 1993. So we've been selling to Costco for 20 years. We were the first organic item. Oh, I'm so sorry. We were the first organic item ever in Costco. And So before then, we had a lot of really small customers that we shipped to around the country. And then once Costco started buying from us, our volume just grew so fast. And all of the retailers that were keeping their eye on Costco wanted our products. So internally, we call it the Costco catapult. That's when Earthbound went from a little company, really started growing into a big company.
So it's like, how did you amp up? I mean, did you have to start, you know, it's investing in more land and getting more suppliers. How did you do it? I love that American dream story of the good news is Costco called, the bad news is, or there's no other news.
Well, you know, what was interesting is our growth strategy was really about partnerships. So we actually partnered first with a very large conventional farm that saw a lot of economic opportunity in what Earthbound Farm was doing. And so they actually bought out one of our competitors that was kind of faltering, and they transitioned a lot of ground to organic, and they brought the best of modern technology and farming to organic farming to make it more efficient and to make it more affordable. They're the ones that invented an automatic harvester so that we could harvest our salad really quickly and easily without all that back-breaking labor of cutting the lettuces with knives, you know. And it's been a very interesting story to see these conventional growers who really always relied on chemicals and didn't really come into it with the values of the original organic pioneers. And then slowly they started to see that organic really works and that they don't need to spend all this money on chemicals and that the soil gets healthier over time and their yields increase and improve over time. And so even though our original partners, they still actually farm conventionally, what we've started to see is that they start using more organic techniques in their conventional operations, thereby reducing how many chemicals they're using. So our company also is an example of a lot of cross-pollination between kind of big ag and organic and positive really in both ways.
Which makes it work. I mean, I love that. And I love that you use the cross-pollination term. Lil, throw that in. And I have to, we're going to have to go to break in another minute or so. But when we come back, I'd really like to talk to you about the big organic versus the buy and shop locally. I think that there's never a silver bullet to anything. And I think we have to have both. And I'd like to get your view on that. And I'd also like to share with listeners some information about your cookbook, your restaurant called Our Farm Stand. And the biggest question I have is, do you sleep? That's what we'll come to when we come back. So everybody, please stay here with me. I am having the pleasure of interviewing Myra Goodman, who co-founded Earthbound Farm, the largest supplier of organic produce in the country. She is an author, like I said at the open, a passionate champion for the environment and helping to make organic produce available and a healthy choice for all of us. So, Myra, does that sound like a good lineup that we're going to be able to cover all that in the next 17 minutes?
You're going to remind me what order.
I'm going to remind you of everything. I keep good notes because I, too, suffer from going off on tangents, and I try to bring it back. So, everybody, please stay here with me. There's a lot of excitement left to share about this American dream story from the New York couple that goes to the West Coast and the organic farm begins. Stay here with me. We'll be right back. Mrs. Green's World.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. The 2013 VW Jetta TDI is the sedan people love to love. It comes with a zippy turbocharged diesel engine that's 90% cleaner burning than previous diesel engines, and it goes farther on a tank of gas than a Toyota Prius. Chapman Volkswagen has a great selection of Jetta TDIs, so choose yours today at ChapmanTucson.com or in person at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Habitat for Humanity's Havistar is changing the world. By selling new and used building and home improvement materials to the public, the Havistar is diverting more than 250 tons from the landfill each year. To donate, call 520-889-7200. Stop by and shop today. The Havistar is located at 935 West Grant Road. Proceeds from all the sales go to Habitat for Humanity Tucson. For more information, go to HabitatTucson.org or call 520-889-7200.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to saying a big, huge thank you to everybody for joining us today. And I know that you're as glad as I am to be here. I am having a blast interviewing Myra Goodman, who with her husband, Drew, co-founded Earthbound Farm almost 30 years ago, which, among other things, became the first company to successfully launch pre-washed packaged salad for retail sale. In other words, salad in a bag. Myra, thank you so much again for being here. And let's start with, I will guide you, the big and bad perception at times among some people versus the shop local, buy local, do everything locally. To me, it's a hybrid and you really need both. So can you talk about your views on that?
Yeah, I think it's an important issue because I think people right now are, there's so much focus on local and not necessarily local organic. And I am a huge believer in getting as close to your food as possible. I still grow my own food, even though we have the largest organic produce farms in the country, you know, and buying your food directly at the farmers markets and from growers through CSAs. And there's so much variety, and it's so fresh, and it's such a wonderful, inspiring experience. But I think some people don't understand that farming methods are very scale neutral. So if your local farm is a conventional farm, they're using the same toxic chemicals that huge conventional farms use in general. They're using those toxic insecticides and toxic herbicides and synthetic fertilizers. And we don't want those chemicals in our local community in the food that we're getting, even if it's, you know, fresh picked a day or two from our local farmer. So I think making local small the ideal and not qualifying it as organic is a disservice. And at the same time, you know, organic farming methods are also scale neutral. And on our biggest farms, which I believe our biggest farm right now, we have 200 growers that grow for us, as well as a lot of farms that we farm ourselves. And our biggest single farm is 680 acres. And even on our biggest farms, as our smallest farms, we still need to use those same organic farming techniques to be successful long term. And so all those benefits of organic farming add up acre by acre. So when you have big farms transitioning big blocks of land to organic, that's a tremendous amount of chemicals that we're keeping out of our environment and our food supply. So I really just believe that all organic farmers are heroes and are doing something wonderful for our planet, for our food supply, and it's really not about big and bad.
That's a really great, to me, that's like in a nutshell, it's the intention and what are we doing? We care about healthy planet, moving the planet forward. So we're all in this together and we can all help move it forward. I had the same similar conversation with Teresa Marquez from Organic Valley. And she said, in some cases, it is because of the big dogs that organic food is even available. If you're in the middle of Why Not, North Dakota, you're not going to get a lot of fresh, organic, locally grown produce in March. So I think it's really important. And you still want to feed your kids healthy. Well, some of the big box stores are going to make that happen. So thanks for that shout out. And the shared intention is what I call it. Now, let's talk a little bit about you didn't have enough to do. This is my story, not what you said at all, because I did a lot of research because I was so delighted to have you on the show. So you didn't have enough to do, you and Drew. Did you sit around one day and say, why don't we open a restaurant and call it Our Farm Stand? How did that happen?
Well, you know, it's actually Our Farm Stand, and in the Farm Stand, we have our organic cafe. And actually, that story kind of goes back to Costco. So our business started in our home, and Drew and I actually grew our business to a $3 million a year business in our little 800 square foot home. Our living room was our salad packing plant, and we had a little washing shed outside.
What a story! Like,
and
if I could have bells go on.
And the community would come and buy salad. We actually had a little really old refrigerator from the 60s on our porch and a little lock box, and the salad was $5 a pound, and people would come grab a pound of salad and put the $5 in the box. And so in 1992, when I was pregnant with my second child, we moved to Watsonville, which was about 45 minutes away, and built our first facility. And I thought, you know, I'm going to have, you know, a little toddler and a baby. I'm going to step out of the business for a little while, and to keep myself busy, I'm going to open this little farm stand down the road. So back in 1992, I opened our little farm stand, and then, as I mentioned before, Costco came on in 1993, and suddenly our business grew so fast and furiously that I never was able to step out. I ended up working totally full-time, but that little farm stand, which is 2 miles from our house, our original farm, is still there now. It's actually been there for 21 years, and 10 years ago, we opened what was then only the third certified organic kitchen in the country. Now there's a few more, but every single thing that we make in that kitchen, in our cafe, is certified organic.
unbelievable. I mean, really and truly unbelievable. Yes, and then sleep is for sissies. So let's talk about, because time will fly, you have published 2 cookbooks. You have a third one coming out. The first one...
My third one is actually off the press, on the boat, but it's not officially for sale until March 1st, but it actually is available for pre-order on Amazon, and I would think at your local bookstore they would be able to look it up and pre-order it. So I actually... They air freighted me a copy. I have one in my hands right now. So I've written 3 cookbooks.
It's beautiful. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful, straight from the earth. And what it is also a book that you wrote with your daughter, which makes it especially special to me, having 3 daughters. So that's great. Amazon.com. We'll do a shout out at the end of the show. So are the cookbooks reflective of your own evolution on your personal journey, like Food to Live By? What's the difference between that cookbook and the Earthbound Cook?
Okay, so my first cookbook was Food to Live By, and that is a collection. There's 250 recipes, and a lot of them are the recipes that I got from, because I grew up on TV dinners. My husband grew up in Buffalo, so there was a lot of meat and a lot of stews and a lot of naughty desserts. And they were also our chef from the farm stand also contributed recipes. So that cookbook is I would call the recipes a little more classic American and a little more naughty. But what I wrote in that cookbook has the very personal story of the beginning of the whole story of Earthbound Farm and my passion about organic. And so when I wrote that book, after I wrote it, it was so impactful in my life unexpectedly. Like, I would have a young family come up to me at the farm stand and say, you know, I never really thought about organic before your book, and now I only buy organic for my kids, and I try and buy organic as much as possible. Or at one of my kids' sporting events, someone would say, I make your muffins every morning, I love them so much, or your flank steaks are a new favorite. I felt so connected with people making my recipes that I want to try another cookbook. And so my second cookbook, The Earthbound Cook, I wanted to give people that also has 250 recipes, but woven through the recipes is I wanted to give people more of an understanding of how their food choices and their preparation habits affect the environment. And like, so there's a lot of little teeny tips. There's longer essays that really explain so many different issues, from how to protect our oceans to how to save water to, you know, what kind of meat is the most ecological to pick. So it's kind of an eco Bible cookbook.
And that is really, to me, when we talked a little bit before the show, I talked about my personal journey as well. You start eating healthy or take one step in a sustainable life, and all of a sudden it's a whole new world, because you start questioning things and looking at your waste and how much water am I using. So to me, it's very reflective of what happens when people start to live consciously. Now,
yeah,
what,
and I,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I think that when you are eating food, that you can really trace it back to its origins. You know, it doesn't have a bunch, it's not processed food with a bunch of ingredients that you don't know what it means. You know, it's fresh whole foods that you've cooked yourself that you know was grown sustainably. I think that I just enjoy every bite so much more when I know it's not only delicious, but it was a good choice for my long-term health, the health of my family, and the health of the planet.
Now, the thing that you're helping with as well is by your third cookbook. I mean, we are that story. We call it comfort food. And everything, my mother was a fabulous cook. And everything was meat and potatoes, gravy, a dessert. She did cook a lot of fresh foods. She made salad every night. But it was a lot of, like I said, meat, potatoes, and gravy. Those were the staples that came, you know, in our family.
Right, right. And I think what's very interesting, so my new cookbook is called Straight from the Earth, Irresistible Vegan Recipes for Everyone. And so what happened to me is my second cookbook, The Earthbound Cook, we had an employee at Earthbound Farm he was a Stanford MBA, and he had been hired to be our consultant to green our supply chain. And he helped me do the research for this book. And in the process, he became a vegan. because so much of the research showed that one of the biggest things that you can do, the biggest thing you can really do to reduce your carbon footprint is eat lower on the food chain. And so he said, if you want my help again, you're going to have to write a vegan cookbook. And I was, Chad, I'm not going to write a vegan cookbook. You know, I'm a meat eater. But then I started paying attention to how much food I ate that I loved that didn't have animal products. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to assemble a collection of recipes that are all plant-based, that are omnivore-tested, so that the average American with the average American palate would be satisfied and pleased, and you could, you know, any day of the week make a full menu that was plant-based that you could feel good about eating. And so that's what I did. And the process of writing this cookbook and eating more vegan food has made, I would say that my consumption of animal products is down to about 20% of what it was before I wrote the book, and not because of any shoulds, like I should eat less, because I want to eat less. I feel better eating less. I'm enjoying this food more. So that has been a wonderful discovery for me that surprised, I've been surprised by that.
I know. I say to people, I'm a carnivore, and I'm changing too. I mean, we have changed a lot in our family. But what I'm excited about your new cookbook is it is not easy to segue from meat, potatoes, and gravy to delicious and really good tasting meatless recipes. So I think people are going to be excited about your recipes are flavorful. The cookbook, I saw the cover because you sent me a PDF, is gorgeous, but I think people are hungry for it. It's like, just help me on this path. I want to eat less meat. What can I do so that my food still tastes good? Because I don't want to compromise flavor for, you know, meat's pretty easy to make taste good if you ask me.
It is, and it's fast. You know, I think that if you're going to be cooking plant-based foods more often, in general, it takes a little bit more time, but it lasts a lot longer. You know, I only, anything that I make that has meat or fish, fish even less, but meat or chicken, I only give it 3 days, and if there's leftovers, I throw it out, whereas vegan food is really good for 5 to 7 days so that your leftovers can last longer, you can cook in bigger batches. So once you sort of figure it out, it can actually be a time saver, and it's also more economical. You can compost everything. And what I really got excited about, which initially scared me the most, is vegan baking. Some of the best desserts I ever created are in this new cookbook.
You're kidding. That excites me, too, because I'm a sweet eater. We've had a great guest on our show, and she's a very dear friend of mine, and they've started something here in Tucson that's exploding. It's called Healthy You Network, and she's helping me. And that's one of the biggest things she says is you have to be willing to put in a little bit more time, because preparing healthy food does take a little bit more. And she bakes, you know, she has 3 boys. She'll bake a bunch of sweet potatoes on Sunday, a bunch of, you know, healthy pasta and maybe some marinara sauce. And then when the kids come home hungry, there's something good for them to eat. So I think preparation is a huge piece of it. Myra, what would you say to people that are listening? This is a big one, okay? If they got off the show, other than ordering any of your cookbooks, but certainly the newest one, Straight from the Earth, what would you say their call to action would be something to consider? Because I'm like you, I don't say should be, but what would you say would be a great call to action for people that want one takeaway from Myra Goodman about living a more sustainable life?
Well, I would say two. And one is, you know, buy organic whenever you can and eat less meat.
So those are really good ones. And I do things, 99% of the time I remember it. If you start off with meatless Mondays, it's such a little cliche, but that's what we did. We start off like, okay, I'm not eating meat today. And it really is easy. Now, what about dairy? Do you eat dairy, or are you really going more in a vegan direction?
I eat a little dairy. What's very interesting is the Environmental Working Group, which is EWG.org, has a chart that's actually included in my new cookbook with their permission, but anybody can find it online, and it'll show you the CO2, the global warming gas equivalent environmental footprint of different foods. And what's very interesting is hard cheese is really high. It's right after beef. It's before pork and before chicken. But softer cheeses and milk is much lower because you have to use so much milk to make cheese. So if you're looking at it from the point of view of the environment, when you're doing Meatless Mondays, you really want to try and not use too much cheese, you know. But I do eat some dairy. I really try and eat only organic dairy because I really like not having the growth hormones and the antibiotics, and also the contaminants in, you know, really stay in the fat cells of animals. And so when you're eating that high in the food chain and you're thinking about conventionally produced animal products where they're fed all of this
right.
conventional grain that's genetically modified, where they use
it's
tons
awful.
And of pesticides, and it's getting concentrated in the cells of those products.
Myra, I hate to do this, but the music's going to cut you off. So we're at the end of the show, and I had to get this in. Next week, Heather White, Executive Director of the Environmental Working Group, is my guest. One of my favorite
wonderful.
Organizations
so ask
on the
her
planet.
About that.
Okay, make it a great green week. Myra Goodman, thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World and for all you do to make our world a healthier place. Thanks, everybody.